Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone. Welcome into the Monday Morning Quarterback Podcast. I'm Matt Verderam alongside Gilberto Manzano. It is Thursday, May 30th, and we are rolling through OTAs. We are rolling toward minicamp and then going into training camp in about 6 weeks. But for right now, OTAs it is. And Gilberto, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Yeah, Matt, you know, for a bit, I kept thinking about my vacations in June or July. I just want to get to the summer break, that 1 month off. I look forward to it every single NFL offseason. But, Matt, I don't know if you saw the proposal from the NFLPA potentially changing all that. Now I'm thinking about how I'm going to spend my vacation for next year.
That proposal seems very dumb. I don't know how else to put it. Like, I don't understand why, if you're a player, you would do that. That feels really short-sighted. Like, you, by the way, if you're a player, don't have to go to OTAs. Yeah. They are voluntary. You cannot be fined for that. Minicamp is mandatory. You have to be there if you're under contract. But if I'm a player, especially if I'm a veteran player, I'd be like, yeah, listen, I'll see you at minicamp. That sounds great. Like, I'm not going to OTAs. They're pointless. And then spend those 3 days in, you know, whatever city I'm playing for, and then go from there. The idea of going to training camp on, let's just say, June 20th, so you're going to be in camp for 2 months? What are you doing in camp for 2 months? There's no world where, to me, that makes any sense. I don't think you need camp for more than a month. Training camp and spring training in baseball came into existence because guys in the 50s and 60s and 70s would show up out of shape because they had a main job being a plumber. Like, that's why that existed. Guys now show up with like 6% body fat. They're fine. They don't need training camp if they're veterans, most of them. A couple of weeks they'd be good to go knock some rust off. 2 months of training camp just seems astronomical.
Yeah, and then you think about it, say the contenders that go from, what, June all the way through February or late January, and then I'm not going to show up if I'm one of those players, like on a winning team, like, okay, you won't see me at all March, April, May, I'll see you middle June. And that's like 4 months of, I guess, on your own to be disciplined, to work out on your own. I don't know. It just seems like, you know, you need that break in between. I get that injuries, you know, sometimes occur during the ramp-up period, and you got to be smart about it. But I think the players that stay in shape, the ones that are disciplined for that one, obviously spend that time with your family, have a good time for that month off, but you still got to, you know, have some kind of workout. So when it comes to, you know, late July, the appropriate time for training camp, are you ready to go and maybe avoid some injuries?
It makes no sense. It makes no, like, there's no world you're going to convince me that it makes sense to have these guys in there for 2 months. And most of these camps around the league now are very much walkthrough-esque. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're going to have, you know, some contact, but not a lot. There are some teams that still have a lot of live periods. The Chiefs are one of those teams. They hit a lot in Andy Reid's camp. But a lot of teams, very few live periods, not going to do a lot of tackling to the ground. What are you achieving? What is the purpose of that? I mean, you're going to sit there and stare at each other for 2 months? And I also wonder teams like Dallas who travel. Teams like the Raiders who are now traveling. Teams like the Saints who have historically traveled. The Chiefs who go to St. Joe's to go to the camp at a college. Are those teams going to still do that? Like, are you going to put Creed Humphrey in a dorm bed for 2 months? That doesn't seem like a great idea. I don't think the players are going to be too jacked about that. So I wonder if this goes through, is that the end of teams going away to camp? Is that the end of teams leaving their main facilities?
Yeah, longer training camps in California. Maybe more teams come out in June. Maybe 10 teams next year.
It just seems like a really bad idea. Look, would it shock me if it passes? No, because there's supposedly support for this.
I want to hear somebody say there is support. I haven't seen it anywhere.
I'm glad you said that, because Tom Pelissero's report, Tom's a great reporter, nothing against him. But like, it was like he worded it as like the NFLPA has some support. I am yet to hear one player who's like, you know what sounds great? That sounds lovely. Let's go with that. Nobody, not a former player, not a current player. I haven't heard a coach say that. I have not heard one human being involved with the NFL say, you know what? Awesome. Let's go to camp for 2 months. Let's forget we have families. Let's forget we have lives. And let's just run a whole bunch of slant routes and digs. And let's just sharpen them for 2 months. I feel like that's just insane. I feel like it is insane.
And one more thing, man, like also too, from like the league point of view and the owners and the commissioner, like the reason you want to, you know, you do all these kind of off-season workouts is because you want players to come in and talk to reporters and be in the news for 12 months out of the year.
Right.
And if players are gone for 4 months, like you kind of give up the whole year-round cycle of being involved in the headlines. So from players to owners to coaches, I don't know who's going to like this at all.
And here's the other part of this, that to your point there, Gil, that I think is important. The NFL wants to be in the news cycle 365 days of the year. Okay, and every sport does. I mean, that's you want to be present. And I get that. At some point, though, does that not hurt you a little bit? Like, there's no time for the heart to grow fond, so to speak. Like, you're never gone. You know, if you start thinking about the way the NFL calendar could look. So let's say June 20th, you go in, you have your camp. You go in for 2 months, you have two preseason games. Then you start an 18-game regular season with two byes. That takes you to the Super Bowl being President's Day weekend, okay? You are now playing almost all the way through February. You finish in February. My guess is they would move back to Combine a week or two. They'd probably move back to start a free agency to like, I don't know, let's say like March 20th, somewhere in there. Guess what else is getting moved back? The draft. So now the draft's going to be in May, all right? And then you're going to have the schedule release in late May. What are you going to have? 2 weeks where there's nothing going on? And you're going to go straight into camp? Like, and for people like you and me and Connor and Albert, we're fortunate enough that we're national. We don't have to cover these teams day in and day out. I know you've been on beats before. Those guys have been on beats before. Like, I can't even imagine telling my wife, hey, listen, honey, you're going to have to handle the kids for 2 months by yourself while I'm just chilling at camp every day, you know, writing about the same crap that I've been dredging up for the last 6 weeks. It feels like the NFL has this, Bill Simmons said this in his book about basketball, I think it's apt. It is the disease of more. It's like this constant, never-ending, hey, we're going to have a game on a Wednesday. We're going to have games on Thursday. We're also going to have games on Friday and a triple-header on Saturday. At some point, you're killing the golden goose a little bit. And I think that this proposal kind of illustrates that point.
Yeah, and to go off of your first point, it's like, you know, the reason I like to watch combat sports is because, like, the whole buildup to a massive fight, you've been waiting months and months.
Sure.
Like, you like that feeling. You know, football is in a similar way because once a week, you're waiting all week, you know, to either set your lineup or check injury reports or whatever, your bets, and then you get to Sunday, and then you're excited. But you hear this thing over and over again. It's not the same, you know, type of feeling of excitement for you know, for the product's already being affected. Now you're gonna get tired about all the headlines. And you know, one more thing you mentioned, Matt, because I went to go check out Chargers OTAs yesterday, and you know, I say hello to all the beat reporters. It's always like a groan or like, I'm okay. Because, like, nobody wants to be there in May. Like, what the hell are we doing out here? And, you know, seeing guys in shorts and kind of just playing, you know, tag football in May. Like, you're excited for that July training camp report day. And I couldn't imagine the feelings for reporters when a report day is June, what, 10th or 15th?
It's not good. It's not good. I don't like it. I'm going to... next week, I'm going to Bears minicamp just to, you know, it's 40 minutes away, go down the road. Same kind of a deal. See some people, you know, say, hey, how you doing? Watch Caleb Williams. And I know I'm going to be back there for training camp. So I kind of want to get like a before and after, like kind of compare and contrast. Might go up to Green Bay. We'll see.
You're going to have to count all the interceptions from Caleb Williams at practice.
Because apparently
that's a big deal.
You know, listen, it's funny you mention that. So, yeah, I have seen all the same tweets that have been coming out. Like, my God, he just threw another pick. You know, I was breathless. I remember the first year that Patrick Mahomes was a starter. It was his second year in the league. So, you know, first year as the main guy. I forget the exact number. He threw a lot of interceptions in training camp. A lot. Like, to the point that some of the beat writers had, like, counters going. And there was an article that came out that, in a paraphrasing, it was like, you know who doesn't throw as many picks as Patrick Mahomes? Case Keenum. And that's why Denver's going to be really good this year.
Wow.
And then the season started, and Mahomes threw for 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns, was a league MVP, and was like, you know, the most phenomenal first year as a starter in league history. The point being, I am not concerned about Caleb Williams throwing picks at OTAs. Like, I would rather him be pushing his boundaries and trying different things than just checking it down. I'd be more concerned if people are like, hey, man, just checking it down, just hitting that running back every play. Like, I'd be more worried about that than him pushing the ball down the field and throwing a pick.
Yeah, and then I remember your story that you mentioned, you know, Jordan Love had that rough practice you attended. And then,
he was rough. He was bad.
Come October, November, this guy's playing lights out. So you want to have the mistakes right now. So, yeah, seeing those tweets and being a reporter who got to cover a team every single day, like, I used to hate that stuff, keeping track of, you know, passing completion and all attempts. Like, it's right now, who cares? They're all learning, you know?
I mean, it's just, it speaks to the point that there's nothing else to do, you know? And when I was there, you're right, when I was up at the Packers OTAs last year, I sat there and watched Jordan Love, and I think he was 6 of 18, and he threw 3 picks. He was abominable that day. He was so bad. I remember, like, beat guys on the sideline like, this might be a long year. He can't complete a pass. And I went up and saw him in camp, and he looked much better. He still wasn't great, but he was like, you were like, okay, if he plays like that, like, they'll be respectable. They'll win, you know, half their games, which is pretty much what they did. They went 9-8, and then they went in the playoffs. But the difference was, as you point out, by the end of the year, he was playing at a top level. He was playing excellent football. Caleb Williams right now is not what Caleb Williams is going to be in September. But this is what we get stuck with. You know, it's the same. Look, the worst people in the world are these aggregators on Twitter, these like NFL Rookie Watch and like all these different, you know. And, you know, some like Jaden Daniels throws a swing pass to Austin Eckler. I'm like, damn, Jaden Daniels is going to be a problem. Like, he might be, but not because of that pass. Like, I don't know that that's what we should be basing our you know, analysis on, but we live in this world where, you know, somebody clips out one little thing, good or bad, and it sets an entire narrative. Like, Aaron Rodgers was getting, like, it looked like he was getting retaped, maybe his shoe was off and they were working on his feet, and people are like, oh my God, Aaron Rodgers, you know, like, he didn't blow his Achilles out, like, he's getting like a tape job, like, what are you worried about? You know, I mean, we'll see. Let it play out a little bit. People just go crazy, good or bad. It's I don't know. Yeah. Unfortunately,
the ones that make me laugh are like the players kind of going not jogging or sprinting through the little drill. It's like a half walk, and people are like, oh, this guy's not giving 100% effort, yeah. Or I guess the one drop maybe the player had on the drill, like, oh, he's gonna be a bust. But that's the way we live. That's the world of today with social media and all that.
There was a play. It might have even been rookie minicamp. I honestly can't remember. I think it was. Keon Coleman ran a route for the Bills. It was like a comebacker. And he ran the route. He came back. He caught the ball. And, you know, one of those accounts was like, Keon Coleman, he's going to, you know, showing why he's a star. And if you watch the play, like, Keon Coleman at the top of that route took about 10 steps. And I was like, look, I'm not saying Keon Coleman's not going to be good. He might be very good. That route in particular is absolutely not the reason why he's going to be a star. Like, I guarantee you his receivers coach looked at that route and was like, Keon, got to shave off about half those steps, bud. Like, you got to get rid of those choppy steps. And that's fine. He's a rookie. Like, that's what these things are for. You know, like, it just happened to be Keon Coleman. It could have been one of 50 guys. But I remember watching it thinking, like, whoever's tweeting this out knows nothing about football. Because to watch that, I'm thinking, like, if Sauce Gardner's on him and he runs a route like that, it's going the other direction. And that's fine. But the problem is everybody sees everything now, you know? And instead of seeing, like, Keon Coleman 3 months from now when he's cleaned up the footwork and he's got better timing, you see that play and you see this guy, like, damn, Keon Coleman's going to be Jerry Rice. Like, I don't know if that play shows that, you know? I'm not sure, but in any event, let's move on. You know, listen, one thing I wanted to touch on, because it is the offseason and we're looking for some stuff, to be frank, and I thought it was interesting. So ESPN and Seth Walder, they put out their FPI rankings every year. It's ESPN Analytics, and FPI stands for Football Power Index. And it's basically a power ranking. I mean, it's essentially it's power rankings with some analytics juiced into it. Their top five teams were the 49ers, the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Lions, and the Bills. And they have little, like, numerical scores next to them to try to show you, you know, basically how much of a difference there is between these teams. So, like, for an example, the Niners are plus 5.1. The Chiefs are plus 5.0, so they're right there. The Ravens are 0.48, and then, or excuse me, 4.8. And then the Lions are 4.0, so there's a gap between the Ravens and the Lions, so on and so forth. But top five: San Francisco, Kansas City, Baltimore, Detroit, Buffalo. The bottom five, in order from 28 to 32, Washington, the Giants, Denver, New England, Carolina. Do you have any qualms with the top five, the bottom five, or do you think that that's generally correct?
For the most part, the list is not surprising. You don't need to give me, like, analytics and stats and machines and ChatGPT to figure that out. But I am curious to see what they figured out for having the 49ers over the Chiefs. The Chiefs beat them twice there in the two Super Bowls, and one in 2020 and one in February. So I guess it's more about who's going to be better in 24, not something that you've done in the past. Is that correct, Matt?
Yeah, it's looking forward.
Okay, so I guess maybe that's the way you could decide that, but I'm sure if you're a Chiefs fan, you're looking at that list, it's like, oh, okay, the team that you've beaten twice in two Super Bowls in the last 4 years ahead of you, you kind of scratch your head at that one. But, you know, teams go through different changes every offseason. Obviously, you know, with the Chiefs, you know, who knows what happens with Rashee Rice? There might be a suspension, right. There might not be. Right. You lost Jerry Sneed too, so things like that. But other than that, I really have no problem with the list, bottom or the top.
So I tend to agree. Look, I get why the 49ers are where they are. They have a loaded roster, and the NFC is an easier conference than the AFC, and so that's all factored in with their analytics, and I get that. That's fine. I found it interesting, just looking 1 through 32, and I'm not going to read them all off. You can obviously go check it out over at ESPN.com, give them credit. The lowest-ranked team from the playoffs a year ago, who made the playoffs a year ago, the Buccaneers at 22. They're situated between Seattle and Arizona. And the next lowest playoff team is Pittsburgh at 17. They're 0.0. So they're about as average as it gets, right smack dab in the middle. Now, the Buccaneers won a bad division, but they won a playoff game. And they beat the Eagles, who are eighth on this list. And then they went toe-to-toe with Detroit, who's fourth on this list, as I mentioned. You think 22 is too low for Tampa? You think that's fair?
It seems a little too low, and maybe this is where I'm getting, you know, in trouble, is looking too much of last year. But I did like that they retained that core group of Baker Mayfield, Mike Evans, Antoine Winfield Jr. You know, obviously the defense, you know, has some young players that are on the rise, like Elijah Kansi, Yaya Diaby.
Yep.
You know, Todd Bowles did a good job towards the end of the last season, but building the defense. Obviously, you lose Dave Canales. Maybe that could be more of the factor there, where You don't have that offensive genius, that play caller for Baker Mayfield to do it again. Maybe that's the biggest thing. There's like, can you believe in Baker Mayfield to do it for 2 years in a row? It's kind of like the Jared Goff factor. We're like, all right, that was a nice season in 22. You know, they got close to the playoffs. You know, they didn't make it. Then he comes back. They go to the NFC title game, and you don't have the same concerns about Jared Goff. So maybe you could see that, you know, with the Buccaneers. But I like the roster overall. If they're okay without Dave Canales, and you know they're building through the offensive line. And you still got Godwin, and still got Mike Evans and Rashad White. So you know, and it's not a strong division either to get out of the NFC South. Maybe the Falcons could be the ones that get in their way. But after what they did last year, how impressive they were to the divisional round, it feels like a little low to them.
I agree. I feel like they're behind Seattle. They're behind the Colts. And I like the Colts. I think the Colts will be better this year if Anthony Richardson's healthy. And the Colts almost made the playoffs last year. They're behind the Bears, the Chargers. The Falcons, by the way, are 15th. They're at plus 0.2. So factor that in for what it's worth. Looking at the list, I mean, I think it's fair. I think it's a pretty reasonable list. I think the Bengals are a little low at 7. Now, granted, they're coming off some injuries. They've had some stuff going on with the trade request. But, like, I think they deserve to be ahead of Buffalo at this point. And I think Buffalo's going to win the AFC East. I'm not bagging on the Bills. I just think the Bengals deserve to be a little bit higher. Your hometown team, the LA Rams, they're 13th between the Jets and the Browns. I like the Rams. You know, I'm a little worried after losing Donald. I mean, obviously it's Aaron Donald, but I think offensively they're going to score a ton of points. I think the Rams could be a little higher, but as they sit in the NFC, they're behind the Niners, the Lions, Dallas, Philly, Green Bay. So they have them as the number six team in the NFC.
You know, that feels about right because I am a little hesitant to, you know, jump in on them after what they did last year without Aaron Donald. It's like, yeah, like you could top what you did, but like without one of the best players of all time, that seems like a little tough to do. But you know, getting Jared Verse and Braden Fisk in the draft, we landed Byron Young and Kobe Turner last year. You know, we'll see what Tre'Davious White has in the back end of his career. Darius Williams too. They got Cam Curl, the safety there. So you know, I think it feels right. I got to see more, but I know people are really high on them. But to kind of switch over for the LA team, Matt, like. The Jim Harbaugh effect on people right now, they're propping up the Chargers pretty high and knowing that team very closely, like I'm like that ranking feels a little like it feels right to me because they're like in the 20s, right?
So
or 18 or maybe it's a little high then because a lot of teams or a lot of pundits are saying, you know what, they could be 10 games or 12 victories there, and I'm like, they feel more like a 7-10 team, 8 wins, 9 wins. But
I'm with you. I think right around like eight wins. I think that's about like 500.
Yeah, so is 18 too high, I guess, at that point? I guess the way we're seeing it for the Chargers?
Yeah, I think it's cool. Like, the problem I have with the Chargers, I think Harbaugh is a terrific coach, and I think he's going to get them going. But I think it's going to take a year. Like, when you look at their roster, I know these guys are older. They lost Eckler. They lost Keenan Allen. They lost Mike Williams. They lost Corey Linsley. They added Joe Alt, who I think is going to be an excellent player, but he's a rookie, and Ladd McConkey. Like, when they go three wide, it is Joshua Palmer, Quentin Johnston, and Ladd McConkey. I mean, that's, with all due respect to those guys, that's a lower tier group of weapons, and their running back is either Gus Edwards or J.K. Dobbins. I also have concern about the fact that Greg Roman's the offensive coordinator. Like, yeah. He is a very run-heavy offensive coordinator. You have Justin Herbert. Like, you have to throw the football with this team. I don't think it's built to do that. You know, the interior of the line, like Zion Johnson's trying to still prove he's worth being a first-round pick. He's kind of been up and down. Bradley Bozeman comes in as the center from Carolina. Like at this point, fine, but you're not over the moon about it. Tight end, Will Disley, Hayden Hurst. It's not an offense that scares you. I mean, the best weapon on that offense, the best weapon is who? McConkey? And he's never played it down in the NFL? And defensively, it's a lot of questions, man. I mean, can Bosa stay healthy? Can Max stay healthy? The rest of that front seven is not good. And then in the secondary, you do have some talent. Gilman and Derwin James are very good safeties. But it's you know, Asante Samuel is a good corner. And then Christian Fulton, who was up and down in Tennessee, and Jasir Taylor. Like, that doesn't feel like a team that's winning 11 games. I mean, that seems like a team that is going to be very much just a a roller coaster. You know, they're going to win their 7-8 games.
Yeah, you know, they do have Herbert. They got Derwin James. They got Khalil Mack. But it requires more than 3 or 4 players on Joey Bosa to be another one. And can he stay healthy, right? So there's too many holes, too many question marks. And, you know, I some Chargers fans were kind of giving me a hard time for saying this. But, like, I get it's a new year every single year. And you got a new coach in Jim Harbaugh. But I've seen this team year after year after year get hyped and then falter when come the season rolls around. Injuries come to hurt them. They can't win in crunch time. They can't win in these one-score games. Like, I get Harbaugh's going to fix that, but you're asking a lot personnel-wise, reputation-wise, everything this franchise has dealt with to have a quick turnaround from going to 5-12 to, what, you know, 12-5? Right. You're getting a lot of hype right now for that. So I'm with you on the two-year plan for that.
Yeah, he'll get him there. I just think it's going to take a little while. The other team, by the way, that I think is low, and I get it. Like, I understand why. Maybe I'm wrong and we can all look back and we can laugh at me. I think Minnesota, and I know you're on the complete opposite end of this with me. I think Minnesota, if McCarthy is just like a point guard for them this year and he just distributes the ball as he should, I think they have a decent team. Like, I'm not saying they're going to, by no means am I picking them to like win a Super Bowl or anything. I just think, could they be, you know, around 500 and be like a mid-tier team? Yeah, I think they could be. Now, I know, you know, in your picks, you had them, what, 3-14, right?
Yeah.
So maybe you're right, and maybe they're complete garbage, and we can laugh at our editor who's a Vikings fan. That's fine. I have no horse in the race here. But they've got Jefferson, they've got Addison, they've got Hawkins, they've got Darius. So now, to your point, like the offensive line, other than Darius Shaw, is questionable, and defensively, you know, DJ Wanham is gone, Danielle Hunter's gone. Now they bring in Andrew Van Ginkle, and they bring in Cashman from Houston. Is that enough? I don't know. We're going to find out. So there's a lot of change there for Brian Flores' group. I guess in the end, I like Kevin O'Connell and I like their weaponry. But yeah, look, I think, you know, in ESPN's power index, they have them 25th. They have them tied essentially with the Raiders, who they have the 24th. I think they're better than that. I think they're going to end up being like, I think they're going to be about what the Chargers are probably going to be, which is, you know, how I see. But Maybe I'm overvaluing this. And I'm not a huge J.J. McCarthy guy. I didn't think he deserved to be a top 12 pick in the draft, 10 pick in the draft. But I do think he's in a good situation for a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and pound the table for 3-14 for the Vikings. Like, it was more like, obviously, not every team could win. Yep. And you don't know what happens during the season. It could be injuries. Maybe you fall behind 0-3, and then the hole is too massive. You can't get out of it. You have a fire cell. You just don't know how it plays out. And if I'm going to bank on a team to maybe have somewhat of a dismal season and falter, it's the one that, you know, lost Kirk Cousins and going with Darnold and a rookie and J.J. McCarthy. Or maybe the team that had Kirk Cousins last year and they were still 1-4 and needed a hole to get out of. And, you know, and they faltered at the end. So, you know, I just don't like that transition year from going to Cousins to, you know, Darnold got this hype last year too when there was some kind of debate between Brock Purdy and Trey Lance and Sam Darnold. Like, oh, Sam Darnold's with Kyle Shanahan. It's going to be fine. Like, I saw the guy play with the Panthers. I saw him play with the Jets. If he's your guy, you might be in trouble because he has a slow reaction on the field. He has a lot of turnovers. And I saw Kevin O'Connell last year deal with Joshua Dobbs and Nick Mullins pick after pick after pick and the frustration that he had. And I just don't know if Darnold could do that. And then on the flip side of McCarthy, like, he was the 5th quarterback drafted overall, maybe for a reason. You know, I get that he has upside. Maybe he didn't pass the ball as much at Michigan, but it's going to be a hard learning curve if he is a guy right away. So that does scare me a bit there. You know, obviously there's some issues with the secondary. I like Renard. I do like Blake Cashman. I like Van Ginkle. Everything you laid out. But they just don't feel like a playoff team. And I had to pick a team to maybe have a disastrous season besides Carolina. And I went that way. But even in their best of the best, they still feel like an 8-9 team. And if you're missing the playoffs, don't you rather be with the top 3 pick instead of the top, you know, 14 pick? And I guess if I'm a team if I'm a fan of a losing team, I'd rather have that top 5 pick.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Oh, look, the worst place you can be is in the middle. It's the worst place. So we agree there. All right, before we get out of here, a couple things. Jalen Waddle got a new contract. Yeah. 3 years, what was it, $84 million, I believe, was the total. So that's, if I'm doing the math quickly in my head, that is $28 million a year. Not bad, not bad. And I think it just goes to show, like, the price for these receivers keeps climbing. And so if you're CeeDee Lamb and you're T. Higgins and you're Brandon Ayuk and you're Justin Jefferson. We sat here and talked about it last week. That I don't know why you wait. Like, now, Cincinnati, I know why they wait, because they're just not going to pay him. But Jamar Chase also didn't show up though with the A's. Like, well, let's get paid more money. It's going to be very interesting to see as more and more receivers come out of college kind of ready-made because more teams throw the ball than they did 20 years ago. I wonder how many teams are just going to say, you know what? We're going to treat receivers like they're running backs. We're just not going to pay them. Like, that's fine. I think right now we're in the era of everybody trying to pay their receivers. I wonder if that's different in 10 years.
Yeah, it makes me wonder, but I feel like even with the running backs, when you had the best of the best, like the Christian McCaffrey, or even when Alvin Kamara got his contract, like you make exception for those guys, and obviously the McCaffrey one paid off and Kamara not so much, but you know, with the wide receivers, like I think you got to make exceptions for Justin Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb, two guys that were drafted in 2020, and that's,
yes,
they're going into the fifth year. Why hasn't this gotten done? So, you know, you could definitely, you know, blame Jerry Jones, and you could blame the Vikings for not re-signing these guys last year. So, and honestly, you know, I don't know how much truth there was to the report, Matt, with Jefferson being shopped and the Vikings wanted Malik Neighbors. I'm wondering, what were we trying to do? Like, pair Malik Neighbors with Sam Darnold? Like, that doesn't sound right to me.
It's not good.
But if you've gotten to this point where, like, you're thinking about shopping him because the asking price is too high, then that's on you, Minnesota. You could have locked up the guy a year ago. How do you get a guy who was that elite to go into their fourth year, not have a deal, and you were still here going into year five, in May 30th, and no contract? So if I'm Jefferson, I would just wait it out. You're going to get your turn eventually. There's an exception for you. Or, hey, maybe he gets traded and he gets, you know, $40 million somewhere else, or whatever the number is.
Right. And I think there will always be exceptions. I mean, a guy like Jefferson, a guy like Lamb are such great players. I would expect those guys are going to get paid by their current team. But I do wonder, like, a guy like Brandon Ayuk, who's a very good player, but maybe not that level, that elite player. You know, T. Higgins is an example. I wonder if teams are going to go, hey, you know what, man? I'm not paying you $30 million a year. It's not going to do it. You can play your contract, maybe even get tagged. Here 5-6 years, see you. We'll go sign, you know, or we'll go draft some kid in the first round and get, you know, if you want to include the two tags, 7 potential years of control. And I think that's probably, frankly, economically speaking, the right move, unless the guy is an outlier like a Justin Jefferson or like a running back like Derrick Henry was, Adrian Peterson. Guys like that are always going to get paid. But it's that second tier of guy. Like, is it worth paying, you know, the second tier receiver, maybe the guy who's a top 15 guy, not a top 5 guy, top 10 guy. I don't know. But I think, we're seeing all these contracts. I mean, there's no other position in the sport getting paid like this except for quarterback and edge rusher. That's it. I wonder if teams are going to start saying, hey, every year feels like a generational class at receiver. Maybe just wait it out and pay and not have to pay because you got those guys coming down the pipeline.
It makes me wonder what Miami is thinking with, you know, pretty much essentially having two receivers making $30 million per year, and Waddle and Hill. And I know Hill's get older, and I haven't looked at his contract. Maybe it's, you know, there's something there for in the future to get out, but why would you want to get out of a player that explosive, that contract? And then you got to pay two up essentially maybe $50 million per year. Like, that doesn't seem like a good recipe and a good budgeting and good resources for the salary cap. And we'll see what happens with two. I know we discussed it last week, but it just makes you think about that.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I think it's going to be very interesting to see how teams go about trying to piece together a roster with the cap in mind and everything else and how these guys are coming out of college these days. I think it's very interesting. Very interesting. All right. You got anything you want to plug before we get going?
Maybe just, you know, check out all our stories at SI.com. I know you got the offensive triplets, and I'm going to do the defensive triplets. That's coming out Friday. Your story is already out, you know, if you're listening on Thursday. But it does make me wonder, Matt, because I read the intro of your story, you know, why doesn't the NFL use big three? They go with triplets, and triplets because of the term in the 90s for the Cowboys, and it just stuck. And I just started thinking, like, yeah, it's always been triplets and not the big three. Those are just random things I think about, but check out those stories. And everything we've done the past week at SI.com.
Yeah, echo that. You've got your defensive triplets coming up. And I know we've had tons of stuff go up this week, whether it's from you and me or Connor or Albert. I wrote a piece ranking the head coaches and the quarterbacks. as combinations and which team has the best to the worst. That came out, I believe, on Thursday. And then also, starting next week, we have our 32 teams in 32 days where you and I will alternate our pieces. You have the AFC, I have the NFC. So please make sure to check that out. That starts, I believe, next Tuesday, and it runs pretty much smack dab into camp. So check those out. Those are fun, hopefully pretty informative. We have fantasy angles, betting angles as well, but also just a lot of just straight, you know, talk about the team and where we think they might end up. So check all that stuff out and much more over at SI.com. Of course, you can also follow us on our Twitter accounts, X accounts, whatever the hell they are now, keep track of everything there. So for Gilberto Manzano, I am Matt Verderam. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back again next week. It'll be June, and we'll be rolling toward mandatory minicamp. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
American Giant makes great clothing, t-shirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.